So, while you were in Kyoto, you also got to visit with Master Dyer, Kenichi Utsuki. How's that pronunciation?
I think it's perfect. I think he'd be very proud of you. Okay. Better than I could do it, Bob.
And if I understand correctly from your article, many people come from all over the world on what you call an indigo pilgrimage just to pay homage to this man and his work. And his work is displayed as far afield as the British Museum in London. Now, what did you learn from him?
Well, first of all, I is the Japanese name, or I or Aizen is the Japanese name and word for indigo. And indigo is also something precious in the Japanese culture. Well, first of all, his studio is just beyond gorgeous. It's in an old Edo house that dates to about 1850. He has spinning wheels. He has these fabulous, exquisite patinaed wood cabinets, you know, just with dye stuff in them and different threads and different fabrics. And then he took me to the back of the house, and that's where his studio was. And he had like three different huge barrels. And those were his indigo vats in different stages of readiness. You know, so one would be more of an intense indigo, one would be a medium indigo, one would be a lighter one, because, as I said, it's a fermentation process. And in Japan, they add sake to their indigo for the fermentation process. And as you said, there are ceremonies that are revolve around this high art form. And what he did was he made something for me. He took a silk scarf, and he took some thread. You know the kind of thread they wrap boxes in the bakery, the old-fashioned bakery?
Yes.
Okay. So he took thread like that, and then he took sections of the white fabric, and he tied them very, 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 very tightly. And actually, it was sort of a form of sophisticated tie-dye, and it's called shibori. And that's where you literally, it's a form of tie-dye, but it's more sophisticated because you arrange your knots in a specific pattern. They're not just random like kids do on their T-shirts. So you can create a really beautiful design, a very finely detailed design, using the string and placing your knots intentionally in certain areas. And then when you dye this piece of fabric and you remove it from the dye pot, everywhere that you bound the fabric, it's a resist process. So when you open it, you have a white area, a little white circle that has not been dyed. And you can create a beautiful design like a flower or a bunny rabbit or a leaf. And as I said, that process is called shibori. And a lot of the kimonos that the geisha girls wear are made just this way, and that's why they're so expensive, because all of that is hand-knotted. And sometimes they even use thread that's as thin as sewing thread that you would sew a button on. So it ranges. So what I learned from Mr. Utsuki was, well, the first thing was he also showed me his incredible museum-quality textile collection that is a fabulous historical collection of the finest shibori and some of the finest Japanese textiles of anywhere in the world. He was very proud of that, and he invited me into the private living quarters, and we sat on one of the tatami mats, and we spent about an hour looking at his textile collection before he took me to the back, and we did our dyeing together.
So this was a major privilege for you.
It was an honor. And as I said, you know, as you said, you know, people from all over the world know about him, who are serious textile collectors, diplomats, heads of state, princesses. They all come to see his workshop. And not only does he have a workshop, he has a gallery as well, where his beautiful wife, who looks like a model, Hisako, will, she's also the designer. So she will take the fabric that he dyes, and then she will design it and have it sewn into some really beautiful, elegant garments. They are quite pricey.
A number of last questions for you, Michelle. First, and comments. First of all, you include in your article the lyrics of one of the most famous songs by Ella Fitzgerald, Mood Indigo. And the song goes, you ain't been blue. No, no, no. You ain't been blue till you've had that mood indigo. What is the mood indigo?
Well, I think mood indigo differs for everybody. Like I said, I love working with indigo. I'm intrigued by it. I was fascinated when I found out that it was harvested as a crop in northern Florida. I love indigo. I wear it. I love working with it. I love dyeing it. But some people, perhaps, who are blue and who are depressed, maybe it's a color that comforts them.
Ah, sort of a contrast color. Now, Michelle, when are you going to do a T-shirt for me in indigo?
I don't do T-shirts, Bob. How about a pair of boxer shorts, silk boxer shorts? I don't do T-shirts.
Well, I don't know whether we should be broadcasting the fact that you're going to do boxer shorts for me in indigo, but I'll go for that. Whatever, the next time. Michelle, this has been terrific, and I should point out to everybody that your article is on the Talking Travel website on the, it's called... So, you accepted an invitation from the master dyer of Marrakesh to enter his dye stall. Now, tell me about that experience.
Well, it was just fabulous to actually see a master dyer dye a hank of yarn in a natural indigo vat. And just stepping into his stall, it was so dark, it was almost impossible to see. And there's this huge, huge vat pot that was just spewing and bubbling, and it was sort of like a witch's cauldron, with smoke being emitted, and he handed me a hank of white yarn, and he showed me how to dip this yarn into the indigo vat. Now, the indigo vat, even though indigo is blue, the indigo itself is not a blue dye. Now, this is what's interesting.
Mm.
That's right. It's almost a greenish, grayish, urine yellow.
Okay.
So you immerse the yarn, is immersed into this vat, and it's just held there for a matter of a few minutes, and then it is picked up with a long pole, like at the end of a broomstick, and right in front of your eyes, it goes from being this urine yellow color into a gray blue, into more of a blue, into a medium blue, into a dark blue. Within a matter of just a minute, it's called an oxidation process. The oxygen in the air activates the color.
Sounds like magic to me.
It is magic. It is total magic. And that's possibly why for so many centuries and generations, people have considered indigo such a magical dye and color.
Now, Michelle, I want you to take us to, and our listeners, to a city in Japan that I found absolutely fascinating, and I know you did, Kyoto. The
mm-hmm.
old capital of Kyoto. And you had a very wonderful experience there with indigo. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I'm a textile designer and a textile artist and a textile collector. And I also teach workshops on textile dyeing and painting and have written a book on the subject. So I'm intrigued by textiles, Bob, and I always have felt that textiles tell stories about people and about their culture. And that's how you can learn about a culture, is studying their textiles, because a lot of times in these textiles there will be important symbols that have been either woven, painted, or blessed, or somehow incorporated into the textiles. Even on a sarong, for instance, you know, on the border of a sarong, those all have a special meaning. That pattern on that sarong has a special meaning and significance. So when I was in Kyoto is one of the most important textile centers in the world. This goes back probably about 1,000 years, because, as you said, Kyoto was the capital of Japan. So therefore, you had all of the dynasties living there, all of the royalty, and all of the court. So they had a need for very elaborate, exquisite, expensive brocades, woven obis, they wanted sumptuous textiles to wear. I mean, if you're an emperor, you're not going to be wearing a cotton T-shirt. So, you know, you're not. So, or go to Walmart. Yeah. So, therefore, this whole industry began and was supported by the court and by the emperor. And the one area, the historical textile area of Kyoto, is known as the Nishijin.
Yeah.
And for centuries, this is where the exquisite textiles have been woven, dyed, manufactured, even to this day.
Now, so for anyone who's listening, they can go to your article, which is called Indigo Infatuation. It's on the Talking Travel website. You just have to enter that title into the search engine on the home page. And, Michelle, you actually give people links telling them how to learn how to do this. Before we go, I just want you to tell us one more time, what is the experience, how does the textile industry fit into your travel experiences?
Well, Bob, as I said earlier, textiles really tell stories, and every culture has a story to tell, and it's represented in their textiles. If you go to Indonesia, Borneo, you have your ikat, and those ikats are just full of symbols that protect the wearer of the textile. You go to Malaysia, and their sarongs have borders on them that have certain significant symbols that, again, usually they're considered magical or they protect the wearer. So everywhere you go in the world, every culture has a story to tell through their textiles.
Do you know what, Michelle? You're a cultural anthropologist as well as an artist, as well as a travel journalist. Did you know that?
It's funny you said that, Bob, because when I was a little girl, I wanted to be an anthropologist, and my family wouldn't let me. So now I have the best of both worlds.
Right. Thanks again for this, Michelle, and we look forward to another chat in the near future.
Thanks, Bob. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.